Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Chris Buccanani. Chris, what do you say? We get to actually talk about football, real football. Well, sort of real football.
Real fake football. And I'm happy to have the opportunity, no doubt.
Is that what we'll go with? Sort of real fake football?
It sounds good. Which is about, it's an apt description of what we saw on Saturday, I think.
It is, but you know what? For a starving man, a drink of water, something, I don't know, something like that. We're going to go, for real football, you have like a 9-month wait in between. So
yes,
whatever
you
crumbs we could get, Chris,
no doubt.
When you're starving for football.
Blue-White Weekend is the oasis in the football desert. I do appreciate that little chance to reconnect with the Penn State football experience. Remind yourself what you've been missing. Give yourself a little bit of a preview. And as I know we're going to discuss here over the next hour, you'll see some things that you really ought not take too seriously, but they're not completely absent any value at all. I think there were some takeaways from this weekend, actually, that are going to have some value come fall.
I think there are and this is what we have you here for, Chris, to separate the wheat from the chaff, what you really take seriously and what you just eliminate. Let me start with this, though. Prior to the game, I thought it was interesting. James Franklin said, you know what, we have enough depth now to play like a real game, and we're going to divide up the talent so it's balanced. Was that his idea of a balanced game, Chris?
Well, it certainly didn't look that way in the scoreboard, right? But to comment on that, I will say we've been saying over the last few months that we feel relatively confident that the defense is going to be strong once again. Maybe not quite up to the level of last year. I think we all agree they maybe take a little bit of a step back, but it could be as little as half a step. This could be a really strong unit once again for Tom Allen. And the question was, can the offense raise its game and elevate to play at the same level as the defense, which was the issue for last year's team? So if you were going to have one of the two stacked units having a little bit of an advantage, especially given the old football saw that the defense is always ahead of the offense, I think the fact that Drew Aller and a lot of the top-end offensive talent got some things going is encouraging.
It is. I don't think it was anything overwhelming at all on offense that we saw. We also have to remember, let's talk about that white offense, which was essentially the first team. Okay,
yeah.
They were without their starting tight end, a very good player. They were without their two, I'll call them starting running backs, who are both very good players. They were without what I'll call the presumptive starting tackles, valuable positions there. So even at...
And missing what, assuming nobody jumps in the transfer portal, as rumors are suggesting, are presumably the two starting wideouts for this fall too, right?
Well, yes, that's I'm going
to... Look, whether Keandre Lambert-Smith ever plays another snap in blue and white, as things stood going into that game, he was, you know, one or two on the depth chart in terms of who's going to get out there and get the most snaps at the receiver spot with Julian Fleming, who played on the blue team.
Yes, and now we're recording this prior to any announcement. Do you have any doubt that he's gone?
I would be very surprised at this point if he's back with the team. As you and I discussed before, Jim, you know, it's been a roller coaster with that guy. And I don't want to talk about him too much because, like you said, by the time this hits the air, it might be outdated. But I thought there was a strong chance he was not going to be with the team after the bowl game. He was either going to move on or go to the draft or enter the transfer portal. And so then I think you and I said a couple weeks ago, after you got through that period, the fact that he's still on the team seems to indicate he's going to be on the team. I mean, he was showing up in Happy Valley United commercials and please give to NIL and all that stuff. And here we are. So it is what it is. I suppose once we have a definitive answer, we can get into it in greater detail.
We'll get into it more. But probably if you talk to us in January, the most unlikely scenario was for him to stick around for the fall, for the spring, and then leave. Okay, pick out any other scenario you want, and I would have bet on that scenario happening before it worked out the way I'm at least presuming it is. And you
mentioned, it seems unlikely for an experienced player to do that. A guy who kind of knows what he thinks his value is and understands the game, the lay of the land. If you're going to make that decision, you would think you'd just pull the trigger, right?
Right. And to understand why, if his plan is still to go to the portal and end up in another school, by leaving after the bowl game, he would have had the advantage of entering school somewhere else for this spring semester and having spring practice on the team that he's going to play for in the fall. So if you're going to go then. Don't wait till now. And the guys who this, and we'll probably get into it a little bit later, but the new window for the portal is going to be opening up, and Penn State is going to have some activity there no matter what, Chris. It has to. They have, you know, way too many players on scholarship, so they're probably going to have many players exiting, few, if any, players coming in. But back to this game, and you mentioned at least two of the three top receivers were not on that white offense. The other part was Julian Fleming, who played for the blue team. I guess it was some sort of weird initiation process. If you were a transfer portal guy like Julian Fleming and AJ Harris, you had to play on the blue team in the spring game.
It could be. There's over the years, this model of trying to even out the talent on blue and white has been used off and on the games. And there always is what I perceive to be kind of screwy logic in terms of who plays on what team. I also thought specifically to talk about Fleming playing with Bo Prabula and the second team, I thought maybe, especially given the attrition at some of the offensive spots, they wanted to just give that team some shot of being able to move the ball. And so they wanted to put a good pass catcher over there with them. So that was my take on it.
Well, just sticking with this balanced team, Chris, how difficult is it to just put the first team offense, say, on the white, then make the first team defense be on the blue? So you're playing good versus good. You now balance the teams out. Then you put however you want to do it, you know, first and third teams, second and fourth teams, however you want to break it up after that. And it makes more sense. Obviously, if you want to do, and they did some of this, giving Bo Prabula, say, some time with the starting team, you put them in for a series on the offense. It's not tough to do, which I think they could have done more of that just to balance it out a bit, because not that there's any quarterback competition here, Chris, but are you really getting the same fair read of Bo Prabula as you are Drew Aller when Bo is playing with all backups against the starting defense?
Yeah, I don't have a great answer to that, to be honest, because I've wondered the same thing myself. My analysis, which is not very good analysis at all, is that I suspect the coaches know how meaningless all of this is, and they probably just enjoy messing with us.
Okay, that's as good an answer to any of this as I've seen or heard.
I definitely would have believed that during the Paterno era, and I will say that James has a little bit of that grumpy old man DNA in him. You can see it. Like, there is no question in my mind that when it came to useless stuff, like who's on what team in the scrimmage, what the preseason depth chart looks like, I would bet money that over the years, Joe did some things to intentionally tweak the media and the public who were reacting to what they thought he should do with the team. So I wouldn't put it past them. I'll put it that way.
Oh, well, I have no doubt that Joe did that. I mean, he'd always try to convince us that the backup quarterback was the best player on the team. You know, you would hear that all the time.
I think it was the Patriot News or maybe the Center Daily Times, one of the big newspapers that covered the team, ran that poll about whether Matt Kisner or John Schaefer should start at quarterback. And I think that was it for him. After that, he was like, all right, if you guys are going to tell me how to do my job, I'm just going to start intentionally messing with you.
Well, if I'm a quarterback that was part of that kind of poll, I hope to God that I would lose it, come in second, because that means Joe would favor you, okay? If the public...
Correct. And John Schaefer did lose it.
Yeah. If the public said this is the quarterback they want, that's like the kiss of death. Yes, I felt like Joe would intentionally start the other guy just because of that. All right. Now, you know, going forward, talking about this game. Now, if you're Bo Prabula, okay, and you look over and you've got a high school tackle, okay, a high school kid essentially is playing left tackle, and you've got Abdul Carter lining up against him, and you're Bo Prabula, what are you thinking at that point?
Probably that I'm glad it's one hand touch on quarterbacks wearing those BYU jerseys they had on Saturday.
Yes. And I'm also thinking, how fast could I get rid of the ball on any passing play? And why are they wearing BYU jerseys instead of red jerseys?
So I don't know. I don't have an answer on that. But my thinking is that I know James abhors the appearance of the color red anywhere in association with the program. I think when he first got here, he came down to the corner room and had lunch and called the owner over and just sort of politely dressed him down about the fact that the wait staff, some of them were wearing red shirts. So I think finally he looked at it and said, what are we doing? We're not putting our quarterbacks in Ohio State colors in the Penn State spring game.
All right. That's as good a reason as I've ever heard. Chris, that is it for quarter number one. Stick around. We got a lot more blue-white talk when we return.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th, and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training in State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris Buccanani. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking about the blue-white game. Before we get started in segment two here, Chris, just a reminder, on Wednesday, April 24th, that's a little over a week from now, we are going to have another one in our series we're calling Winning Ways. We've teamed with Teammates for Life. That's the Women's Penn State Athletics Initiative supporting women's athletics. We did one of these a couple months ago where we had women's basketball coach on, Coach Keeger. Then just a few weeks back, we did this again with the women's softball team. Coach Kroll was with us for that. This coming up on the 24th, on that Wednesday, we will have women's lacrosse coach Missy Doherty at the cafe downtown. Again, Wednesday, April 24th, starting at 5:30. They just had another big upset. They upset number one Northwestern earlier in the season. They just beat number four Maryland. So that should be a lot of fun. Chris, you've been to these events. they've been a lot of fun, and I think we'll have another great one at the cafe next week.
Yeah, yeah. And for I know there are some people who like to follow where Penn State lands in the Director's Cup, and we have not been finishing as well as Penn State fans who have followed it for a long time are used to. So the success that the spring sports are having, especially the spring women's sports, is going to be crucial in getting us back into, you know, the top 10 where you'd like to see Penn State finishing. And yeah, just a shout out, Coach Crowell had her 100th win at Penn State this past weekend in softball. So good stuff. There's good stuff happening this spring sports season in Happy Valley.
There really, and by the way, not just the Director's Cup. I'm here, and I'm a big baseball fan, so it's natural. I love softball also. I am like hooked now on the softball team, Chris. And I had Coach Kroll, after we did the show with her, I had her on our show again last week. She's fantastic as always. There's no... you could really understand why she's putting together a great program there. And it's a fun team to watch. If you get out there and see them, you'll find out what I'm talking about. And so now I'm, and the same thing with Coach Keeger for the women's basketball team. So I'm really looking forward to talking to Missy Doherty from the women's lacrosse team. It seems like there's some really good things happening there. So again, that's at the cafe downtown, Wednesday the 24th. Please join us. It's a lot of fun. We've had great crowds the first couple events. Hopefully we'll do the same thing with this one. All right, Chris, let's get back to this football game. Let's talk about it, a few of the things that we did see. Let's talk about the transfer players. We had Julian Fleming, A.J. Harris, Nolan Rucci. I want to start with A.J. Harris. He looks like a real player, does he not?
Yeah, like I said, you got to be real careful about what you take away from the blue-white game in terms of saying, hey, here's a serious indicator of anything for the actual season. But I thought of my short list of things that I thought you could take away from Saturday, bullet point number one was A.J. Harris as a player. And going back to our top 12 most critical Penn State football players for the season, I know I had A.J. Harris ranked pretty high. I think I had him at like 5 or 6 because we really need him to play like the 5-star recruit he was. And if he does, not only does that stabilize the cornerback position, I was talking about it with some friends this weekend. Even though Penn State is going to have 3 former cornerbacks drafted into the NFL later this month, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility when you look at the talent at corner and you look at the depth at safety to say that the secondary will be as good or could even end up playing better as a total unit than last year's. So the fact that Harris showed that he has the ability to play at that level, and he gave you every indication that this is a guy who, as I said, is going to compete for the cornerback one spot, I think that gives me a lot of optimism about what the defensive backfield could do this year.
A couple points there. First of all, my apologies, I didn't mention Jalen Kimber also, who was the transfer from Florida. And I'll lump those two together in that I wanted to see at least one of them step up and be a guy, a real guy. A.J. Harris looked like a real guy out there. This was a starting caliber cornerback, and how he looked, how he moved, how he played, everything about him just struck me as a starting cornerback, Chris. The other thing you mentioned about 3 cornerbacks going to the NFL, and I'm glad you then lumped the safeties in as part of this defensive backfield, because one of those cornerbacks, Daquan Hardy, he was the slot cornerback. Now, that 5th defensive back does not have to be a cornerback. That could be a safety, sure. And it appears that's going to be the case. So if we don't have the same kind of depth and talent at cornerback, we could just grab it from the safety room.
Yeah, right, which is why I say it sounds nuts to suggest that you could lose 3 corners and not lose or potentially even improve on the productivity, but the depth is there. I mean, this is what great top 10 programs should expect to do, which is to reload on an annual basis and be smart in the transfer portal. And so, yeah, I'm very bullish on Harris. I have been, and nothing I saw on Saturday takes me off of that point. He very early on, Jim, I don't know if you'll remember the play, but he made a read on a swing pass. I want to say like Cam Wallace, and just came up and read the play, trucked him, and shut down a drive. And that's the kind of thing that I get it. It's an exhibition. But when you see the speed, the instinct, and the power he hit with, you think, okay, this is a guy who was at home in an SEC program. He came here from Georgia and is going to be the type of player you hope can be the type of player we need him to be. So, yeah, AJ Harris was my number one takeaway from the game.
I'm glad you brought up that specific play, Chris, because what it reminded me of was KJ Winston a year ago making a kind of play like that, where he came up, blew up a play that initially looked like it could be more. It was him reading it quickly and making a tackle where, I always put it, the offensive player was going to stay tackled. I mean, it was a sure tackle. You knew that. And that was the kind of play that makes you say, yes, it's one play in an exhibition game, but it's an example of the talent and makes you feel very good about it. The other part to it, Chris, that I want to highlight is I don't think James Franklin gets enough credit for how specific he is in bringing in transfer portal players and how successful. He really diagnoses this is the position where – let's set wide receiver aside for a second. But when you get guys like Arnold Ebikidi and Chop Robinson and Hunter Norzad, it just feels like he really identifies where they need help and brings in a specific player. And it's the rifle approach as opposed to the shotgun approach. He's not bringing in a dozen guys, but the couple guys he brings in are real difference makers.
Yeah, and, you know, you chuckled a little bit about wide receiver. I mean, you know, Dante Cephas is maybe the exception that proves the rule. And everybody thought, you know, analysts around the country, they thought that was the guy to go get out of the portal last offseason. So you can't fault him for looking at what he did at Kent State and imagining how it could translate into a big-time offense. I thought that was a great acquisition by Penn State. You know, it's just sometimes it doesn't work out. But, yeah, to your point, the hit rate on transfer portal guys coming in, being a good culture fit, and being impactful on the field is really high for James. So I agree he deserves a lot of credit in that regard.
Yes, he's his batting average has been really, really good.
And now, Mitchell Tinsley worked out great, you know?
Yes.
Another Group of Five kid who showed – explosiveness and ton of talent on the field, and he came in and he did exactly what you hoped he would. So yeah, it's just not going to work out every single time, but more often than not, it feels like when you see Penn State pull a kid out of the portal, you can have confidence that that's going to be someone who's going to contribute.
Chris, we were talking about how AJ Harris really looks the part. I'll bring up another guy that I thought really looked the part, and that was Trey Wallace. Now, I've been a Trey Wallace guy for quite a while. And, yep, health has been an issue. I know the greatest ability is the availability, and he hasn't been available. But when he's on the field, he looks like a legitimate Big Ten, NCAA-level wide receiver.
Yeah. I'm a broken record here. That's sort of a dated phrase, but it means I'm repeating myself for our younger viewers. But I don't want to take too much away from what you see in the blue-white game, but another thing you were hoping to see was a little bit more chemistry between Drew Aller and his receivers, maybe some signs that he was developing confidence, finding a couple go-to pass catchers, especially in the absence of Tyler Warren, who didn't play in the game. And I thought the connection between Drew and Trey Wallace was very encouraging. And of course, with the qualifier that you hope he can stay healthy and be on the field. But yeah, they need to get a lot more production out of that position this fall. And that looks like a place where they can indeed get it if he can be on the field.
And I know this conversation will probably spill over into our third quarter when we talk about the wide receiver. So in a way, Drew Aller was missing two of the three top receivers if you would have looked at Fleming, Lambert Smith and Trey Wallace as his primary targets. Julian Fleming playing with the blue team. What did you think of the performance of the rest of the receivers?
I thought it was a mixed bag. I thought that it was nice to see him connect with Liam Clifford a few times. I think, you know, you heard a lot of praise during the broadcast from having talked to the coaches. The broadcast team talked about what Liam's been doing from a leadership standpoint and really maturing as a player. And you see that a lot. Guys who just, they take a big step as they become upperclassmen. They've had a couple years in the program to really start to figure things out. And so I think if he can get on the field more and become kind of a reliable security blanket type receiver for Aller, that's good. I thought Caden Saunders, who's a kid I like a lot and has maybe frustrated me at times with lapses in concentration, flashed that same tendency a couple of times in the game. So yeah, that's perhaps the biggest question mark coming out of the blue-white game is what does the second tier of the receiver depth chart look like?
Yes, you're exactly right. That's going to be part of the conversation. And it's going to be part of the conversation when we come back for quarter number three. So stay tuned.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th, and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training in State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. We're talking the blue-white game from this past weekend. And Chris, when we wrapped up quarter number two, we were talking about the wide receiver position. Would you like to hear a positive note about the wide receivers?
I would love to, yes.
All right, let me give it to you here. Obviously, you know, the Keandre Lambert-Smith potentially leaving again. By the time you hear this, it may be already decided one way or the other. But, and there's positive and negative comments about him. But if you say, look, that's an experienced guy. He was the guy who went into last season, the number one receiver, and you're losing him. How could that be a good thing? Well, here's what I think is important. If it is Julian Fleming and it is Trey Wallace playing the two outside positions at wide receiver and Keandre Lambert-Smith, who I think is best in the slot, that's probably where you have the most depth at wide receiver. And I'll go with the two names that you mentioned. Caden Saunders and Liam Clifford are probably the next two up in that wide receiver room after Wallace and Fleming. And the fact that they both play well from the slot, they play it differently, but that's where they are probably best located. That's where the void would be if Lambert Smith moves on. And it may just be a case of addition by subtraction, Chris, that it opens up an opportunity that one or both of these guys need.
Yeah, I don't know that it's really anything to cry a river of tears over when the guy who was the number one receiver coming into last season at a position group that ended up stinking out loud is leaving the team, right? Like, I certainly at this point you would look and say the kid has some ability. He certainly has a lot of experience. He's played a lot of football at Penn State. You would rather have him than not, but it's not a trajectory changing result if you got to play without that guy, I think. But yeah, I mean, you look at the number of receivers Penn State has on scholarship, and then you match that up about just the confidence level you have in your gut about our ability to get production from those spots in the games that matter most. And it's not great. It's going to continue to be maybe the number one topic of conversation going into the summer. You were asking me about what I thought of the group after the kind of the top names. Malik McClain, you know, talking receivers who came out of the transfer portal, the kid who came over from Florida State last year, had a touchdown in the West Virginia game and then, you know, regressed quickly, including with some costly drops in the Illinois game. I did not see a whole lot out of him in the blue-white game. Again, take it with a grain of salt, but you're trying to pick through the trash pile here and see if you can find any redeeming gems, and there's nothing I can say about what he showed us on Saturday where, you know, my eyebrows perk up a little bit and say, oh, hey, maybe there's something going on there. So that is what it is. You're going to have to hope that Trey Wallace stays healthy, that, you know, Saunders can stay focused, that Clifford can take the next step. But another qualifying point, maybe this allows us to keep the conversation moving, Jim, is, man, I don't know that Penn State has consistently recruited a position better than they have at tight end. Like, without Tyler Warren on the field, you got to see some of the other young guys get out there and take some reps. And there is a lot of future NFL talent in that tight end room. And so if you're not getting a lot of production out of your receivers, and you maybe need to put a Band-Aid on it a little bit, that you don't have a lot of high-end depth at that position, it doesn't hurt to have a room full of great tight ends, and that's an advantage that Penn State has going into the fall.
That is, tight end is one of my favorite positions, Chris, and I often don't talk about it because it's not an issue. It's not a problem. They just crank them out one year after another, and Tyler Warren, he could be playing in the NFL, or he should be getting ready for the draft, okay? It's that level of talent. But it's just, all right, I think it was a case where he wanted to take his turn as the top dog, the number one guy, which he will be this year. And it looks like there's just more on the way. You know, Dinkins could really be a factor, but we're finding out, you know, Rapoulier, the talk about him has been so good. They're gonna be three deep at least, and they have Luke Reynolds coming in as a true freshman. So you made the great point there.
Who made a really nice catch towards the end of the game. Now, I think you would prefer to have him play his four games and maintain his red shirt. Because one of the things I heard about Luke Reynolds, who I know talent evaluators think for sure is a future pro, is that he could benefit from, you know, a year in the conditioning program to put some more weight on him. And I thought you could see that yesterday. It was evident to me when you looked at Reynolds versus the other guys who were playing tight end, there was just a visible to the naked eye size difference with him. But I thought still, you definitely saw him flash the skill set that made him such a highly regarded recruit. Yeah, it's great. It's great to have so much depth at that position.
Have you seen him in civilian clothes, just normal?
I have not.
Okay, I have. He looks like a guy that you look at him and say, he can put on a lot more weight. Yeah. He looks great. You know, at that size, that build, it looks like he could carry that additional weight. And you said it's in an ideal world. Well, guess what? At tight end, they sort of have the ideal world. Correct. They don't have to push them out there because you have so much more talent already in the room. You don't have to do that. And, you know, just one more last note on Lambert Smith, who we're talking about. And it reminds me of the story, and you've probably heard this kind of thing before, but I think the first I ever heard of it was with Ralph Kiner. And for you youngsters, look him up. Do the Google thing, all right? Ralph Kiner, one of the great home run hitters. He played years and years ago for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and he went to the owner demanding more money, and he told him, look, we finished in last place with you. We could finish in last place without you. And I kind of feel the same way with Lambert Smith at wide receiver, you know? We didn't do so well with you. Okay, we can have that same poor performance without you also, okay? So you were not a game changer for us a year ago, So, and in fact, that's where I, and I don't mean, I've never met Keandre Lambert-Smith, and I don't mean to disparage him, but you look at the performance of the room, and I'll throw out one other note, and I've talked about this before, Chris, and it always strikes me when I hear a coach talk and there's so much coach speak. He keeps using the word maturity when he talks about Julian Fleming.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's just talking about Julian Fleming. I think he's talking about what that wide receiver room lacked before Julian Fleming got there. And
James
I
is
think
not
very
incredibly
telling.
Subtle in the way he subtweets some of his players and position groups with his public statements. So, yeah, I think that's right for sure.
Yeah, and I thought it was very telling, and everything that we're hearing on Julian Fleming has been, it looks like there will be new leadership in the wide receiver room. And again, you know, to paraphrase, look, we finished poorly, you know, with you. We could do that without you. And maybe that changing of the guard there at the wide receiver room was necessary.
Quickly, Jim, yeah. I would be remiss, too, to let the receiver conversation pass without mentioning one other guy who could be an X factor in the fall and flash a little bit on Saturday, and that's Amari Evans. And if you go back to last year's blue-white game, he and Drew Aller seem to have signs of a connection going on. And we saw it again on Saturday. Now, Evans did not factor into the offense a lot last season until late. The scuttlebutt I have heard on him is that at least early on in his career, he's super fast. And so he was a straight line stretch the defense guy who maybe did not have an elaborate route tree beyond that. And maybe that's a polite way of saying that. But as soon as you saw the offensive coordinator transition happen, where Mike Yurcich left and Ty Howard and Juwan Sider took over, clearly there was a decision made that, look, if this guy can do that one thing and do it well, let's let him do it. And it had, you know, it manifested in the Michigan State game. And so if nothing else, if he's made no progress between the end of last season and today, that may still be another feature that Andy Kotelnicki is able to work into the scheme. But I thought he ran some nice routes and made some nice catches yesterday or Saturday also.
I'm glad you brought him up, and I want to circle back to this conversation. I was the one who led it about having, if Keandre Lambert-Smith is not there, having the slot receiver, you backfill that with Caden Saunders, Liam Clifford. But it was interesting, the quote, and I forget which receiver did it, and it's not the first time we've heard it this spring. Each receiver is going to be expected to play every position. Mm-hmm. Among the receivers. And I was glad to hear that, because my answer to that off, well, why not? Okay. You know, if you're a talented receiver who could run good routes, I do understand some of the things that from the slot, there's different styles that might work better in the slot than on the outside. But why not be able to reposition these receivers? And it sounds like what Kotelnicki wants to do is create the mismatches, put players in motion to create that kind of thing. So I did want to add that also. And if Amari Evans has this specific skill set, let's take advantage of it.
Yeah, and Drew Aller clearly seems to like throwing to Amari Evans. So if he can continue to develop his game, I said before, he could be a real X factor for that room. Especially if, as you were saying, he could be an inside-outside guy. It was so frustrating last year because you just felt like all you needed was for one, and at the most two guys, to elevate their game a little bit. And everything was going to be fine. And the problem was just nobody did. Not a single guy. So Evans is another name to watch going into the summer.
And I'm really glad you mentioned in those last couple games, with the changeover in offensive coordinator, it seemed like there was this emphasis on trying to do things a little bit different, which we didn't see from the prior offensive coordinator, to make use of the talent in the room. All right, Chris, that's it for quarter three. Still have lots to talk about with this blue-white game. We'll do that when we come back.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 training in State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We're talking blue-white game from this past weekend, Chris. And we haven't yet got to what I thought was the most interesting part, where we have a position battle going on and some interesting players. That's third team running back, okay? Now,
yeah,
we all love Nick Singleton, Catron Allen. 1 and 1A, okay? We get that. We understand that. And they will get the vast majority of carries. We know that. But there probably is room for a third running back. Plus, again, this is running back. We've been very fortunate the last 2 years with those two players not getting banged up. Forget serious injury. I'm just talking about tweak an ankle, need to miss a game, need to miss half a game, where we have absolutely needed that third back. So there is a place for a third back, plus you just never know when there'll be some emergency need for them. So the fact that neither Catron Allen nor Singleton played at all, I was perfectly okay with that. Yeah, we know what we got there. Yeah. Perfectly okay. I wanted to see these guys. What did you think of them?
I was excited by what I saw, particularly in that Quentin Martin, the freshman running back from Bell Vernon, appears to be as advertised, right? Once again, take with a grain of salt anything you see in the blue-white game. But just like I said with A.J. Harris, the ability to make a read and finish a tackle is not going to change, you know, from a fake football situation to a live fire one in the fall. You can't – the speed is there, right? The ability to slip through a small hole and then turn that short gain into a big one by turning on the jets – that's going to apply no matter whether you're watching a practice inside Beaver Stadium or a live game. And I thought, you know, the promise of Quentin Martin is that he's got that unique level of speed that he can get to. And I thought you saw it on display. And going back to what does Andy Kotelnicki do if he's got to, you know, put some flex seal on the wide receiver position a little bit? Another thing he could potentially do, and you heard discussion about this during Martin's recruiting, is put him out as a slot back type of receiver. You know, I think there are other options on this team, and it's great to have an offensive coordinator who's renowned for his creativity, that if we are not getting the production out of the wide receiver room that we hope, and look, I'm not saying it won't happen, but past precedent suggests there's a real danger of that. There are going to be other pieces on the chessboard that he can move around and maybe, to borrow a phrase from Moneyball, recreate a receiver in the aggregate.
Well, that's a good way to put it. I thought we saw something from Quentin Martin, Cam Wallace, and even London Montgomery. Now, going into this, here was my expectation, just on the little bits and pieces we've been hearing. Quentin Martin is still that true freshman. He should be in high school, okay? I think we as fans sometimes look at the high school numbers. We fill in the blanks. We're looking for the next superstar. I wanted to temper my expectations for him. When you have Cam Wallace and London Montgomery coming back, listening again to James Franklin, as you said, not real subtle, and he said, Cam Wallace, He's changed his body. He put on the size, and he did that without sacrificing his speed. He's had a great offseason. London Montgomery, he didn't change his body. He's going to be 180 pounds up against a 220-pound linebacker, blitzing linebacker. Unfair fight. Okay, I already decided in my head Cam Wallace was going to be the guy for this 13. I walked away from it, though, really impressed with Quentin Martin, as you described. And I get it with London Montgomery. You want him to be bigger. But that one run that he had, boy, did he look quick.
Yeah, yeah. You feel really good about the future of the position and the depth behind the top two guys and the potential for one of those depth running backs to be, a piece that gets moved around and can make an impact in a limited number of snaps. A couple other things as we're wrapping up here, I just wanted to hit on. We haven't talked too much about the offensive line, and I do think part of that, Jim, is just between the guys who were out and the mixing and matching of players across the blue and the white team. I don't know how much you get from that. I was trying to watch the O-line as much as I could, and I thought it was kind of a mixed bag. Certainly, I think Cooper Cousins looked as advertised. We hope that the injury he sustained very, very late in the game is not going to be too serious. But definitely Abdul Carter looked like he's had no issues shifting from linebacker to defensive end. They did rush him from a stand-up position several times, which I wasn't surprised by at all. But that, of course, comes with the caveat that there was so much transition on the offensive line. It's not exactly like he was going up against, Big Ten quality starting tackles like he's going to see in the regular season.
Chris, I'm glad you brought up those points. I did want to talk about the offensive line and Cooper Cousins specifically. Now, in a game like this, sometimes it's hard to get any conclusions about the offensive line. Perhaps one conclusion I made is Egan Boyer's not ready to face Abdul Carter.
Right.
But with Cooper Cousins, I think what you could also get is the indicator from the staff and what they think of him. And again, a lot of offensive linemen were out, but Cooper Cousins was right there starting with the white group, first team-ish at guard, and then made the transition to center. It told me what that staff thinks about him and that he's ready to – they think he's going to be ready to play right away.
It's very unusual but not unheard of for a true freshman offensive lineman to play. And, I mean, it's just consistent with everything we've heard about him during his recruitment and since he's gotten on campus. So, yeah, it didn't surprise me at all. It was, like I said, just showed – kind of like with Quentin Martin, you saw what you were told you were going to see when the guys stepped on the field. So, yeah, that's encouraging. Another thing, we've spent the whole broadcast talking about a bunch of different points, including the receivers. I thought you also wanted to look to see a little bit more confidence from Drew Aller. I thought last blue-white game, he showed some reluctance and hesitance in that game that at the time you were like, well, it's a scrimmage. It was a weird setup. I don't know how much you can take from it. But then if you look through the lens of hindsight on how he played last season, some of the places where he struggled were hinted at in the spring game, right? So you hoped, could you see a different looking quarterback in year two? And I thought, again, it was a little up and down with one caveat being the weather. The wind was crazy. That makes it very difficult on the quarterbacks. But I thought, Jim, and you can disagree, but I thought I saw some encouraging signs from him that he looked a little bit more confident and decisive at points. It looks like he's starting to develop a little bit more ease and trust with his receivers. On the other hand, I think we saw the quick trigger to throw the ball away when the primary read wasn't open and the reluctance to risk the interception, which is, that's been litigated many times, the good and bad of that. But I thought it was, again, maybe a mixed bag, but if I had to grade them out, I would say, I think I saw more positive than negative.
That's an interesting take. And I wanted to ask you about both quarterbacks. And it's funny, I've gotten feedback from people, a couple people who were putting the positive spin with Drew Aller. I got some other people who, one line I got from one of our listeners. He sent me a message that, who told Drew Aller that he's playing at the Horseshoe in Columbus? You know, comparing it to a poor performance that he always would have against Ohio State.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And I'm not sure I came away with any take on either him or Bo Prabula. And again, Bo Prabula, I would have called it a poor performance if he did that with the white team, but with the blue team, he was going to war, you know, he went into the gunfight with a knife, you know, and yeah. So to draw any conclusion, and with Drew Aller, I guess I didn't think I saw enough good to come away saying, oh, you know, he's better. I didn't see enough negative to say, oh, there's a problem there. I just kind of walked away from it. Okay, that's Drew Aller. That's Bo Prabula. Let's see what we get come, you know, late August.
Yeah, I think that's right. I would grade it out about evenly, other than to say, again, I thought I just wanted to see some sign of progress, especially in the trust between him and his receivers. And there were hints of that. And there were a few plays. Again, you just talk about personnel transition in this game, which is why I wouldn't want to compare it to like a situation where I'm playing Michigan or Ohio State. There was a play where I thought he made the right read. And there were a lot of times where he made the right read and he didn't connect with the guy. But there was one in particular I'm thinking of. It was they were down in the red zone and he had a tight end opened over the middle. I forget which way. It might have been Rapelier. I'm not positive. But he made the correct read and the throw was off. Mm-hmm. There was another play like this where he tried to connect with Caden Saunders, where at first you thought, oh, man, he didn't put that where it was supposed to be. And then, you know, the broadcasters talk a little bit and you go back and you watch the replay. And it looked like in both cases, maybe the receiver wasn't where he was supposed to be. And this is what happens when you're mixing guys in and out and you're taking a guy who's going to be a third or a fourth string tight end and you're making him the starter. And, you know, it's his first time getting real reps in a blue-white game. Those kind of things happen. So I think if you account for those, that's why I say I walked away feeling encouraged that there is, you know, especially with the grading on a curve of a new offense being installed, that there's progress being made.
There were signs, and as we started the show with, Chris, I think making any conclusions, positive or negative, you do at your own risk. What you're looking for is just signs, you know, those couple guys. My positives I'll still take away was A.J. Harris definitely looks like a player. Trey Wallace, again, when he's on the field, the third running back position, I feel better, not just for the third running back, but what we're going to see for running backs come the 25 season. Right, Chris, that is it. Thank you so much. Great job, and thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th, and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training in State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.